IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Today with Rachel DiCecco, someone that I absolutely admire and have learned so much from, especially in the past year, journeying into the ESPN world. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited we can finally like spend some time chatting together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that people listening might know some tidbits. And like I said before, you know, I got my full list of your resume here in case you forget. But yeah, I would just love to have the people learn more about you.
Yep. So I currently work for the PLL Academy, which is the training and development arm of the PLL. Prior to that, I helped start the Women's Professional Lacrosse League. And that came after a 12-year career in healthcare where I ran senior living communities. I played lacrosse at Princeton, played for Team USA for about 5 years, and then kind of jumped into corporate world healthcare. Now lucky enough to be back in lacrosse space.
Awesome. Well, we're happy to have you. Happy to have your genius and your innovation and your dedication to the game. So starting kind of from the beginning, how did you start playing lacrosse? How did you come across the sport?
So one of my best friends in middle school's aunt was actually Tammy Worley. Now she's Tammy Kirby. She was a Penn State lacrosse player. I knew nothing about lacrosse. I'd been playing softball. And in like the summer after sixth grade, she said, "You want to go to the summer camp for lacrosse?" Sounds great. We went and like loved it. And then just played on the middle school team and kind of went from there.
Awesome. And you're from New Jersey, you said?
Outside of Philadelphia.
In Philly. There we go. Yep. Really cool Philly Lax. I was there for LaxCon, loved it, ate a lot of cheesesteaks, so big Philly fan over here, big Philly fan. So you ended up going and playing at Princeton. What led you to Princeton, particularly that program?
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, obviously the academic opportunity is unmatched, but I wanted to play field hockey as well in college, and Ivies allow you to do that. So being able to play both sports was really important to me. So when I was kind of coming down to the final few choices, it was Georgetown, Penn State, and Princeton. We're all different, but all wonderful. And going on Princeton's campus and meeting the team, I like connected with them right away. You just can tell, you know, like this is going to be a fit and going to be fun. And I was going to love being part of it. So ultimately decided to go there and zero regrets. It was an incredible opportunity. It's one of my favorite places in the entire world. And like, I would, you know, highly recommend to anybody.
Yeah. I'm sure everyone listens like, yes, Princeton.
Yeah. You're not going to make a bad choice by going to Princeton, but yeah, it was hard. It was definitely hard to make that choice when you're so young, but, looking back now, like, you know, my parents let me decide. They didn't say anything. They just said, okay, like you go through the process. And after I made the decision, they were like, oh, thank God, like you made the right one. They were trying to let me, you know, make my own choices, but I think relieved where I landed.
Yeah, they just pulled out some Princeton shirts out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So you were a two-sport athlete. I played field hockey too. I was goalie, and I don't think I've ever talked about this, but actually my first field hockey day experience, I was six. I vividly remember I was six, and my shin guards were literally as tall as I was. It was as tall as me, like, had to tie my shirt because I was so tiny. And I actually ended up saying I didn't want to play anymore that day because my best friend was in a different group than me and I was just not having it. I was like, I need to go home. This is too much. I can't be in a different group. But then when I got to high school, I'm like, wait a minute, I actually really love sports and I love field hockey, and somehow ended up in, you know, goalie in my transformer gear. But it's so interesting how so many of us played both field hockey and lacrosse.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of like the multi-sport athlete. You know, I played basketball in high school and I think that really helped me a lot with lacrosse, just defensively, strategy-wise, like body control and movement. So being in season all year round is obviously hard, but I do think each sport made me a little bit better at the other, just because you're just using different muscles and different sort of like game strategy. And I think that there's a lot of crossover there for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And so in playing two sports at Princeton, what was that experience like? I mean, I'm assuming with having to travel to different places, juggling classes, that must have been some pretty intense days.
Yeah, it was hard, but, you know, I think I'm pretty organized in general, and like I like to keep things kind of like be proactive and not say things at last minute. So I just really was like very disciplined in my schoolwork. I also have been going to bed at like 9 o'clock since I was 18 years old. So like I knew I wasn't going to be able to pull all nighters. It's just not in me. So like it was practice, you know, school, practice, homework, dinner, generally bed. Now, obviously there was some socializing, but like, I'm not built for like the all nighter life. So I was like forced to just really be disciplined and get my stuff done. And the hardest time for me was like this 2 weeks in between season, cause I just was less structured. But yeah, it was hard, but like amazing to get to compete all year round like that with two different teams was pretty special.
Absolutely. I mean, that's that discipline that you touched on is so important. And I feel like so many of those skills apply to the adult life as well. You know, I'm someone that likes to work at night. So I would say like, I enjoy the late night library and kind of being out and about at night, but moving into working, that was so hard for me to be like, okay, I got to be in bed by 10. Like, girl, you got to be up at 6 tomorrow. You cannot stay up to watch TV. You can't like stay up to read. Whatever you were doing in college is not going to apply.
Yeah, it's hard. I think like, I'm just a morning person. So it just translated well. But yeah, I mean, you just, when you get into working life, like you're going to pay the next day if you stay up too late. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. I'm working on the morning person thing, you know, wake up, do some stretches, get some coffee. But definitely more of a night owl. So I envy you, and I might need some tips on that. But so at Princeton, according to my research, you won two national championships in 2002, 2003. One of those years, you were also named the National Defender of the Year. That is phenomenal right off the bat. And I'm not even done yet, because I know you're ready. You're like, yeah, like, thank you so much. No. You also won the Touraton in 2003.
Yes. Two of the like best weeks of my life, even to this day. National championship graduation, Touraton ceremony. It was a pretty good stretch. I'm just so lucky. I mean, defense like is a team thing, and we were a really good team, and it just happened to be that like I feel like I got credit for the team in a lot of ways, and I played well obviously and did my best, but you know, we won together, and then my whole senior class traveled down to DC for the Touraton ceremony, which was just so special because I felt like this was our award that we won together. And you know, winning those things, it's just those moments with the people that like forever bond you. We were just talking about your trip just to Portugal, like those moments on the field, off the field with the team are just like, I'm so jealous. Like you still are creating those for yourself. Cause that's something that's like hard to find. And when you have it, it's just like this magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, being in Portugal and being back in a team environment, going from being at home, you know, working from home, living alone, all of that, to now jumping into the bus rides and the meals together and just like walking around with the team. I think, like you said, it's so special. And those are moments that even now more so I want to hold on to forever because they're just so rare. And, you know, playing in different leagues and stuff is fun, but then you kind of come home, you're not still within that team environment. And it just, I will continue, even when I'm like 60, I'm going to be finding ways to keep being on teams because it's just so valuable.
It really is. So, and with the PLL, we get a little bit of that with the road trips and the late night cheesy bread. And like, I have generally the same roommate and we watch Schitt's Creek at least 3 episodes a night when we get back to our room. So we, you know, you build those bonds and get those routines with people. And especially as an adult with a family, like to get those moments is pretty fun.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Definitely. And in addition to your accolades at Princeton, you were also part of, you know, you touched on being on Team USA for 5 years. What was that experience like, kind of trying out for Team USA, becoming part of that team, and then adding that onto the legacy that you've built?
Yeah, it was, I mean, representing your country in any capacity is pretty special. My husband was deployed during my time with Team USA twice. So it was this weird, like, kind of amazing kind of confluence of things where he was representing the country in a much more significant way. But I felt like I get to wear the red, white, and blue. Like we're like doing, we're like supporting the country in different ways. His is way different, but that connection, like it was just a neat time. We were just married and not married the first time. So like just participating in something where you get to represent the country that you love. Real talk, it was a hard experience. I came in at a time when there was a whole slew of veterans that were still playing. So the team was mostly veterans and one or two newbies, which was really challenging. And it was hard. And I had just come off a team that I knew so well. We had won championships together. So that was hard to jump into something like that. And, you know, we lost at Navy against Australia with Jen Adams, Sarah Forbes, Hannah Nielsen. Nothing to be embarrassed about. They're some of the best players in the world. But it was really hard to kind of like lose on home soil. Like the USA has won all the golds but two. So like it was definitely a difficult experience from that standpoint, and just like trying to reimagine what it was like to be on a team and like make sure we were doing everything we could to represent our country well.
Absolutely. I appreciate that realness, because, you know, obviously the pictures, it's all glossy and it's fun and it's great, but like that's the next level. That's the highest level of the sport, and those experiences, you know, that's kind of the gauntlet that you go through. And obviously as competitors, like that's the goal, and there's so many amazing things that come out of it as well. So how did you adjust going from, like you said, a team that you knew so well at Princeton and like really being ingrained in that system to now being the new kid on the block once again, or at least in the red, white, and blue jersey on a team with people from different places?
Yeah, so I mean, most of the team have been together for two World Cups, one or two, some, this is their fourth World Cup. So I think Danny's fourth. Yeah, so I think I knew a couple people from college that we had kind of either went to, like Christy Samaras was at Princeton, not with me, so we kind of knew each other. So like you just kind of connect with people, and really like, because it's so competitive, because you're training alone like 90% of the time, it's just like head down, like staying focused, kind of knowing why you're doing it, I think was a big part of it. Like, and that's when I stopped playing. I stopped playing at a kind of a strange time. It was the end of 2008. So I had done all of the time in between the World Cup and was about to do the World Cup and stopped playing. And part of it was because my husband was coming home from deployment and we wanted to kind of start a family. But part of it was like, I just didn't have that like motivation anymore. And it was becoming more stressful than enjoyable. And I felt like, okay, I want to go out proud of what I'm doing, being able to put all the effort in I can. And when that's not possible, it's time for me to move on. And that's what I did. But like you build relationships, and it was just because you're not together all the time. It just you were together maybe three times a year, and then you're competing like against each other because there's 16 spots. Like it's so small. At least when I played, it was 16. I think it might be 18 now. So that's hard for, that's like lingering in the air all the time, because you know like the person that you're friends with, like one of you is gonna make it and one of you's not. So. It's a hard dynamic, but that's what makes it, it's Team USA. I mean, that's what makes it so hard. And that's what makes it so special when you do make it.
Yeah, for sure. And that mental aspect that you touched on, you know, I saw in a lot of social media posts, different Team USA athletes kind of are working hard to stay in shape and stay engaged throughout 2020 and throughout the pandemic. And I mean, I just can't even imagine like how lonely that feels to have your sights on your goal, but you don't even know when the goal is coming.
Yeah, I don't know how they did that. I was so impressed just watching them. I mean, the pandemic was stressful enough. Like, I was grateful to be up and dressed and, like, taking care of my family every day. I don't know. I can't imagine the, like, additional layer of, like, I need to train to be an elite athlete right now on my own time by myself with no promise. Mm-hmm. I'm so impressed. I think the women of lacrosse today are just amazing and have done so much for the sport in the last few years and continue to, like, lay the groundwork for the future of the sport.
Absolutely. I agree. So moving kind of more into your current role. So you've mentioned that you're at the PLL now. Can you talk more about your kind of your day-to-day at the PLL and some of the initiatives that you've been part of?
Yeah. So I started March 2nd, 2020. And then a week later, the world shut down because of COVID-19, which was an interesting experience. I was in New York onboarding when NBA shut down and colleges shut down. And, you know, none of us could have predicted what was to come in the next, you know, 18 months. My role, we did virtual through September because we obviously weren't doing live events. But generally now we're back live. So we run camps, clinics, overnights, players tour. We run about 150 events a year for like 11 to 18 year old boys. And last March when I started, obviously having come from the WPLL and having so much respect for and desire to support the women's game, we launched a women's vertical, which was girls events, which we call Unleashed. And so we run events with the female athletes. And then recently in May, we launched Unleashed, our content vertical. So we have a social media channel, newsletter. We do short form, working on some long form content to really just tell the stories of the women in the game, because they're not being told enough. They're not being highlighted enough and elevated to the degree that they need to be. So that's been a really fun project I've gotten to work on. And the PLL has just been so supportive. They understand the value of women in the sport and in general. And I think kind of have allowed us to kind of run with that and build it and help use some of the PLL resources to make it happen.
For sure. And, you know, it's interesting to, you touched on the work that you're doing at the WPLL and now into the PLL. What inspired you to continue kind of seeking opportunities to grow the women's game, even while working for a men's league?
Yeah. I think a couple things. This is real talk. You're asking really good questions.
That's what you tell. Don't let the memes fool y'all.
This is hard hitting. Seems like it's like a pretty innocent question, but I think one, feeling like I had failed them at the WPLL, like we just hadn't gotten them what they deserved. And like, it had felt like, okay, we've let them down after trying to do so much. So part of it was like, this is, you know, like I'm not accepting failure for these women. I need to continue to help create things for them and make sure that they are supported and paid and all the things that they deserve. So that's like, failure is a pretty big driver, I think, for a lot of people. And then the second part of it was, I love working with those players. I think getting them around the next generation is so important. Like, little girls need to see these women and be with them. And then also aligning them with the men's league. I think the mutual respect between the male and female athletes is also really important for the women's game to grow. And having a platform like the PLL, there is no bigger platform in lacrosse. So now being at the PLL and having the opportunity to help the women in a different way than I thought I was going to be able to support them, but in a fun way, I think was really important to me.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for sharing. And it's interesting. So the way that I learned a lot about the game and watched the game was on TV. So like running home to watch ESPN and see so-and-so running and like Big Ten Network and on YouTube and all these different places. And when I joined social media all those years ago, it was kind of starting to happen that different brands and different media organizations would post more about women's lacrosse and post different things. But comparing all that to what we have now, it's like tenfold. And I love it. Like, I'm living for it. I love that Kayla Trainor's, you know, amazing stick skills were on display, that Charlotte North is going viral and she's on SportsCenter. Like, knowing that female lacrosse players are now really, really starting to get the recognition they deserve at the same level almost as the men's players is like, just checks all the boxes.
All the boxes. And I think understanding like patience, like where we are is not where we're going to be. And like, there's things about it. Like, of course we want more everything for the women. Like, I want more money. I want more broadcasts. I want like more deals, but I feel like it's happening. Like, I think it's just going to, it's, you know, things aren't, there's no switch to flip, but I see like what you said, like I have the old videos from when I played, but they're nowhere. Like, my dad has them and watches them, but like, it's grainy. You can't tell who's who. And then I think about now, we can, like, everything on TV, all the social stuff, like, it's happening. Again, we're watching it happen. And I think like 20 years from now, we're going to look back and be like even more proud of where things are.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And so what are some things that the fans might not know or understand or see about being part of a professional team? Because I'm just so curious. Like, I knew that it took a lot to put these games on and to put the league together, but my best friend Alex and I went to the games at Kennesaw, and I remember seeing all the tents and trucks, and I was like, hold up, like, they're moving houses, like, they're moving neighborhoods to come and put these games on, and just like creating these phenomenal fan experiences that as fans we see the colors and the tents and the uniforms and the players, and like, I'm getting pictures and all that stuff, but behind the scenes, like, y'all are grinding.
Yeah, I think what people don't realize is how much we do with how much goes into it, and how incredibly talented everybody is at their job. Like, when I go to a PLL weekend and I see the sponsor activation, and then I'm like, I literally can't, like, I try and like everything and like be engaged, and I actually can't keep up because there's just so much good social. And then like, my roommate is generally the director of operations, and she you know, I lived with her in the bubble for 3 weeks and just like watching her genius at work, planning and logistics and setting all the little details up that create a fan experience and a player experience. Like I'm blown away every weekend by everybody. It's just, you know, you see the end product, but like you said, when you peek behind the curtain, the amount of work that goes into it is really unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And the bubble was so interesting to watch as well, because it was like, we're all at home watching and y'all are in the bubble doing your thing. You mentioned, you know, you have a family, and I love seeing your posts about your family. It's just adorable. And I'm like, ah, this is great. You know, as a working mom, what was it like to be away from your family for that extended period of time in such like a crazy period of time in the world?
Yeah. So there was like, it's this working mom dilemma. Like you're two people. You're like the working person and then you're the mom. And like, oftentimes you have to be both, and you always feel like, okay, like when I'm working, I'm like, oh, I should be doing stuff with the kids. And then when you're with the kids, you're like, oh, should I be doing work? It's like just and it's any working parent. It's not just a working mom. So it's just that battle of like, I want to be two things and I want to be two like really good things. So the bubble, like while I felt like I missed them terribly and there was a lot of guilt about leaving them, at the same time, that was the first time in my professional career when I wasn't as a mom, like also taking care of my kids, because we were in a bubble. So having, you know, that focus and that ability to just be Rachel, the operations person for the PLL, because I wasn't, you know, doing laundry, making dinners, putting kids to bed, planning events, like my husband held it down, was really interesting and like fun in a way. And also, you know, we had all been locked up for 4 months. So to be around other people it wasn't our family, and to be able to bring joy to the players and bring joy to the lacrosse world, like it was really special. I don't know that I'd want to leave my family again for 26 days, because it was hard. It was really hard. But there was so much I think we learned and so much we got to do and like experience that, you know, I'm really grateful for it.
That's awesome. 36 days. Whew, that's a long time.
It was long.
I almost feel like that experience or that bubble environment kind of validates the idea though, right? Like if y'all can put on events inside a bubble, you can have it on TV, you can engage fans, like that validates all of the different components that you're putting together, that this league is important to fans and just provides an opportunity for the game to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely, like pulling that off and having no COVID issues on top of it, and like, you know, plussing up sponsors and like growing in that kind of environment really speaks to like the trajectory of the league. And we had wins in the bubble, like, you know, like sponsor wins and social media wins and broadcast wins and player wins. And you think like that we were able to execute that in the midst of what we were all dealing with, it does totally kind of validate like this is an incredible product and like it's here to stay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure you were itching to get back into the camp life too, into the different events. So can you touch a little bit more on the different overnight camps that you're doing, particularly on the women's side?
Yep. So Paul started Rainbow Overnight about 2018, and it's a fantasy camp. It's essentially like you go for 4 days, you get really unprecedented access to Paul. We do a ton of sessions on field, off field. You kind of get to see what makes Paul Paul, kind of really like learn from him. It's really unique. So I got to hear about that and I was like, oh, we want to do this on the women's side. Like there's nothing like this. So Unleash Overnight was born. We ran our first one in November last year, 4 days. It's just an incredible experience for these girls. First off, you get like the most amount of sick gear I've ever seen at a camp. Like it's unreal what they get. So obviously like who doesn't love gear? I'm always like, Josh, can you order like one more? Like I love this. And the sticks we're getting for this one they're so good. So they get an incredible gear set up, which is great and fun. And then there's just like, we do a lot of session on growth development, like what it means to be a young girl as an athlete, what it means to be a young girl, as a social media person, and then lacrosse, like how do we get you better? How do we help create a trajectory for you? How do we help create a path? And it might not be college lacrosse. It might just be like, I want to play with my friends and I want to be a better friend, whatever, sister, student.
Yeah.
It's great. And we also launched, and you and I were talking about this, a little bit of a traditional regional overnight model on the boys and the girls side. You know, when I was coming up, like you went to camp in the summer and you played and you like, you know, those night times, there was talent shows, there was like the snack bar, like it was all those moments in sports that are so special. There wasn't recruiting, there wasn't like, you weren't getting selected, you just went with your friends. And I think, you know, we pride ourselves on our ability to educate and train athletes and trying to come back to that joy in lacrosse and like getting better. Like you want to get better, you want to hone your skills. Like who better to learn from than Kylie Ohlmiller and Taylor Cummings and Marie McCool and Paul Rabel and Thomas Schreiber? You know, have them for 3-4 days just teaching you skills without the pressure of recruiting or showcase, like to me is super valuable and really exciting, because I think you know, there's a lot of pressure on kids from a young age now to like make every team and play every tournament and do every lesson. And I think it's like robbing kids of like, you know, why did we play? Why did you start playing? And, you know, try and get back to the little bit.
Definitely. Yeah. And you touched on two things that I think are really poignant, because like the first one being all the different athletes involved in the overnight camps. I love that. Yes, you have like the premier women's lacrosse athletes, but also the premier men's lacrosse athletes. There's no division of like, oh no, we're just sending, you know, the women to the girls' camp. It's like, no, you get to learn from everyone, which I think is so important. And again, like creating those opportunities to elevate and to highlight the female athletes in our sport. They're just as good, just as fun, just as, you know, exciting to watch and to learn from. And then the other thing too, the fun aspect, I think that the more I got into lacrosse, not the less fun I had, but I remember feeling so much pressure to like do certain things or like get really good or figure out how to do X, Y, Z. And I almost have more fun being on like the other side of that and not really being on a team, because like when I was in Portugal, I'm like, well, I mean, you know, we lost by one goal, but at least I get to go get gelato. Like, you know, that's kind of, I want to bottle that up. Like, that's the joy of the game. And that's the reason I play, is because it's just so much fun. And I'm probably going to have gelato after.
Yeah. The perspective, I think, is like, you have it now, you wouldn't have it in college, right? Because you don't know that you're not like there in that, in your life yet. But yeah, I think like the challenge of putting the pressure on these kids and like the reason they're like, why, I always say like, why is the kid playing? Cause like their parents want them to play, because their parents want them to get a scholarship, cause their parents want to be able to tell their friends, my kid is on X, Y, and Z team. And like trying to keep the purity of the game and helping kids have fun is a big challenge in youth lacrosse right now. And we see parents acting completely out of their minds.
Crazy.
And like, what are you doing? Like, I'm always like, what's the end game here? Like, what do you think is going to happen by you doing this to your kid or acting like this? And I, you know, it's going to be a hard clock to unwind, but like, I think we have to at least give it our best shot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so we're on the socials, you and I are on the socials, we're on the Twitter sheet.
Yeah.
Just what is your reaction when you see the madness that is happening? Because it just like, so my parents did not really know lacrosse, but they knew I loved it and they loved me, and they were like, we are going to cheer, we're going to drive to wherever we need to go, and we're going to cheer for you, which I feel like is most parents for the most part are like that. They just want to support you, you know, watch you have fun, all that good stuff. But the stories that come out of parents acting in a way that affects young people in a negative way, and that's me putting it really nicely, I don't get it.
Well, I don't get it either. I think like you see it on social media more than I do, probably because you're way more, you have way bigger following by 50 times. But like,
it's all my best friend on Twitter.
It's like very easy to sit at a keyboard and just say crazy rude things with no consequence. And I see it, like I get, when I see people coming for people I care about on social, like my first instinct is to be like, type back. And then I'm like, no, like this person does not like deserve that your time or like a response, because they're just not worth it. Mm-hmm. But when you take it like in person to children, like literal children, like I was talking to Hallie and Alyssa about this a little bit, like we need like swift, severe consequences. Like the club is not allowed to participate anymore. Done, you're out. Or the, like, and I hate to do that to an entire club or to a kid whose parent has just lost their mind. But like, until there's some level of consequence, like this is just going to keep going. Like, I'm sorry, you're not allowed in any more of our tournaments. Like we don't, and like, maybe they'll break off and start a new club, but like, it's just got to stop. There's got to be a check and balance system for these, to protect these kids.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's disappointing because we know that this is not something that's new. We know that these things have been happening. It's just with social media now, the things are displayed a bit more and we see it a bit more. But events and stakeholders should have checks and balances for this already. You shouldn't have to wait to be called out. You shouldn't have to wait for someone to like beg you to make a change. You shouldn't have to wait until a child is literally harassed at your event to have action.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a really good point. Like, it doesn't, shouldn't be public for you to feel accountable to it. I mean, so the OG tournament operators, Samaras Women, had a purple card that they just brought back. So when I coached CeCe Lax in 2004, when I was in grad school in DC, like if a parent acted crazy, they got carded. And if they got carded again, they were asked to leave. And it's embarrassing enough to make people stop doing it. And like, I think they brought it back for their events, but there's got to be something. Because as a child, if my parent was acting like that, I mean, could you imagine?
Nope. I just, you wouldn't even want to go back.
You would not. I tweeted about the stuff I saw at Grayson's 10-year-old tournament. I could not. I mean, it wasn't abusive. It wasn't like it wasn't to the level of somewhat what we've seen. It was just ridiculous. Yeah. Like, they are children. What are you doing? Like, it was just nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm happy to use my platform to call out those issues and make sure that the environments are safe for all players and families, because it's just, it's not right. It's not right. And we got to call it out. But on to more happy things to talk about. So we have seen you as a broadcaster and analyst for lacrosse across different networks and different schools. And I would love to learn more about, you know, what got you interested in broadcasting. Obviously, you have such great extensive history within the game, and what your experience was like this season being part of different broadcasting teams from your home or similar in that manner.
Yes. So I got started doing Ivy, like Princeton Ivy League network games. They needed somebody to do Princeton games, and I was like, sure, that sounds really fun. It's definitely something I'd be interested in. The first time I did it was like absolutely terrifying, because it's not, you can't just kind of do it. You've got to really, you know, I studied the players and I kind of like walked through what I thought it would be, watched some film, and I really enjoyed it. I think it's fun to analyze games and bring a new perspective. And then I got picked up for an ESPN game. They needed somebody, and like Hallie Quillman, who's the guardian angel of fairy godmother, I should say, she put my name in and recommended me, and you know, I did a good enough job. They wanted to bring me back, and then the Big Ten called, and I was able to do a lot of games this year. And then I did an NBC high school game last weekend, which was interesting. But it's, I mean, it feels, you know, it doesn't, it just feels, I feel so lucky. I mean, I think as we try and grow this game, the voices are really important. And if a casual person is turning it on, like, we have to crush it, because we want them to come back and watch. And so trying to make sure we're saying the right things, teaching the game the right way, making it interesting, is challenging, but awesome. So I absolutely love doing it. I hope I can do it forever. And as we continue to see more opportunities for women, like, you know, continue to do more and more games on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I got to publicly give you a shout out. When I did my ASUN games, I was super nervous, and I reached out to you and you gave me some great tips, provided kind of the structure that you use, some questions that you use to help you prepare for it. And, you know, something I really love about the community, you mentioned Hallie being, you know, the plug for opportunities as well. It's just like, our crew, this amazing group of women, help each other out so much. You know, if you hear about an opportunity, recommend someone. If I hear something, I recommend someone. Like, just the willingness to help each other out and continue elevating, I feel, is so important, and just makes it so much better when, like, all of us are able to participate.
And truly, like, you know, when I see you and Amari on TV, like, I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, you get that pride. And I saw Hallie, and I was at training camp. I saw Hallie in the studio for the championship. And like, I'm like, that's my friend. You know, you like to see women succeeding and doing something they love is just, it feels great. I mean, and that's really the heart of like what we want for the women in the game. You know, like who wasn't rooting? I mean, I was rooting for both BC and Syracuse, but like, who didn't shed a tear when like Kayla Trainer hugged Gary Gate at the end of that game? You know, like, you just, it's just special. You know, it's just pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely awesome. And, you know, I'm curious, like, what, you know, so your daughters are playing, obviously, and as you have seen the game kind of transition and change, like, what are you looking forward to for the women's game? What's in the future for the game as we look internationally you look locally, kind of as things change?
Yeah, when I think about the lacrosse like ecosystem as a whole, I think we're in an interesting place because we're growing really quickly, but we're also losing kids after middle school. So kids aren't necessarily staying in it as long as they used to. So I think it's about, and we just talked about this, it's like making it fun, providing a place for everybody to play. My daughter is going into seventh grade. She played on the, I coach her rec team. She's not a club kid. I don't think she'll ever be a club kid, like level wise. And like she can play in middle school and then there's no place for her to play if she doesn't play club. So, you know, I think there has to be different paths for kids that don't necessarily, that just want to play. Like if you, it's like, if you're not going to be on this path to whatever college, and you don't have, you know, a couple thousand dollars a year to spend on tournaments, like you're kind of left in the dark and trying to think through the, what I want to see in the game is different paths, that ability to play for fun for longer. Because I think that will help the game sort of like grow at the top as well. Because some like I didn't start playing till seventh grade. I didn't know what it was. Like that doesn't happen anymore. And if you're a late bloomer, or like you said, you picked up field hockey again in high school. Like if you decide you want to play, like now you almost can't. Like there's no entry to just like going to high school and playing. So like I would love to see the game evolve in a way that makes it more available and accessible to everybody. You know, and I think, you know, the skill level of the game is just like blown up. Like I see, you know, these US team play and I'm just like, they are really good. How did we just weren't that good. And like some of it's the sticks and some of it's like, they know a lot more about their bodies and training, nutrition and everything, but they are incredibly athletic, incredibly skilled. And I think that's just going to continue to like evolve and the game's going to just get faster, better, and like more fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for it too. Next summer at Towson, I will be there in, I can't wait. Every time I think about it. Like,
oh, it's going to be amazing. Amazing.
So good. And it's funny you mentioned the kind of different paths that kids follow. As my lacrosse career has broadened and more people follow me and I realize, oh, okay, people read what I write. Interesting. They listen. Very interesting. You know, I find myself in such an interesting position because I'm official lacrosse girl because I just love lacrosse. Like at its purest, I just am such a big fan of the game. Every version, all players from everywhere. Like that is the crux of my passion for the game. And I feel really lucky to be in a position to show young girls and really anyone anywhere that it's okay not to be like the best player in the whole wide, wide world. But if you just love something, you're passionate, you care about it, and you can write about it, you can talk about it, you can laugh about it. Like that is a path that you can take. Like you don't have to only be the prototype single best player in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, that's because, that's ultimately what life is, right? Like when you're done playing sports, like most of us, if you're 30 and you're still playing a sport you love, like you are very damn lucky, right? Usually kids, it's 18, 20, 22. And then you've got to be a contributing member of society and a good friend and partner and like employee, and like finding joy in all of those things is hard if you only are happy if you're the best. Now, I am super competitive. I don't want to be the best at everything I do. Can be problematic at times. But I think for my kids, now that I'm raising kids thinking, okay, you know, this is a rat race for a lot of kids. And like, how can I just have them like, just find joy in it? Cause ultimately like that's going to be long-term happiness, not necessarily like trying to be the absolute best. And if you're not, then it's, you know, not worth it or whatever.
For sure. For sure. I'm the same. I remember when I interned for my firm the summer before senior year, we took I think it was like a strength finder test, and my number in strength was competition. And I was like, even the machine can tell that I'm okay. Like the secret is out. I'm like hiding my computer. You know, people are like, what did you get? And I'm like, my number three was positivity. Sharing number one and two, they don't need to. And knowing that my competition manifested itself like in school, I'm super competitive at work and competitive in lacrosse. I'm competitive, but it was competitive to be my best self. And something I did have to learn was how to be competitive in a way that didn't hurt me, right? Like it was like, okay, I got into the corporate world and I'm here. Not everything is always a competition. So what does that mean for me? Like, am I still really smart? Am I still really good at things? Like, is this the right place for me? It, you have to learn and evolve. And I think it's so important for us to know that that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, validation through sports is clear. You win or you lose, right? It's easy. Am I doing well? Yes. Check, like, yes or no. Yeah. But like, as you know, as a grown up and an adult, like, you're not going to always get that in life. And it's like, there's not always, it's not like, yeah, when I ran nursing homes, I mean, it's not a competitive environment. It's, we're taking care of people. Right. And I always would create, like, we would do contests and games, and they were like, you are so dang competitive. And I was like, but this is fun for, like, this is fun. Like, we're going to see who can have the best outcomes, like which floor like does the best, whatever. And like, who gets the most this and the most that. And I can make a competition on anything. but it's like, it does motivate people. You just can't always be looking for that to like find that validation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Those goals, those stats, the wins, everything, that's a validation that, you know, we're taught from early on being athletes. But I just want to be in fun teams, team environments. And, you know, at work, a lot of what I do now outside of the kind of project aspect is I work with different groups on, you know, how do we create experiences for analysts that have just joined, for people that are kind of elevating themselves throughout the company. And like, part of that is just talking to people. That's why I love the podcast. I love reaching out to different people because we can learn so much from each other. It doesn't always just have to be, oh, okay, I'm on this project and like this person's on that project and we don't talk. It's like, what can I learn from that person and how can I help them out as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Love the people aspect. So, you know, yeah, as we see women's lacrosse grow and expand, I'm most excited for how we see viewership transition from this year and having more games on TV. That's been a big conversation that we've had, to now looking at next year and hopefully having lots of, you know, lots of eyes on women's lacrosse as well on during the World Championship. I am curious to hear how you think we can grow the fan and viewership side of the game, because that's an argument and a conversation topic that every single year is like at the top.
Yeah, that's a hard one, because I think it's a chicken or an egg thing, right? So people aren't going to fall in love with lacrosse unless they, a casual, we fell in love with it. So you're going to have your core fans that will always watch, you know, the players and their parents and their friends. But it's like, if we're going to get beyond net new fans, we call it the PL. If we're going to get net new fans, like, you have to expose people to the sport. And on the women's side, you have to get on TV and you have to get like social and you have to get sponsors, but like, you can't, like, a company isn't going to put you on TV unless it makes sense for them to put you on TV for financially, like, just from a quality standpoint. Like, there has to be a reason for them. We can't just say we want to be on TV. We have to think about why. How do we get ourselves there? How does it make sense for all these networks to put us on? So there is that other side of the coin that I understand. So I think it's what we're doing. I think ESPN did an incredible job. You know, you guys had a halftime show unheard of in the women's game. You know, we were like, the selection show, unheard of to be on TV. You know, like, was it perfect? No. But compared to where we were a year, two, 3 years ago, like, I think it's trending. So, you know, I think it's more people talking about it. It's engaging with, it's like crossover, right? Like, yeah. You know, everybody, we expose lacrosse to, you know, if Sue Bird is talking about women's lacrosse, like, that's what we want. We want people outside of our sport, like, bringing people in and helping them understand why it's amazing. It's not going to just grow from within. We've got to like bring outside people in to help us, I think.
Yeah. I love that perspective. I love that because, you know, I've seen a counter argument that's like, oh, why do we need outside people to validate in some way? But I don't think it's even validation. It's just like, they're bringing in their fan base. And, you know, someone who's slipping through who might run into lacrosse. Like, I saw a lot of this in the national championship too, when people tweeted at Amari and I and said, oh, like, you know, I had never watched lacrosse before, but I was flipping through and I heard you talk about it. And you guys just sounded like you were having so much fun. So I watched the second half and now I'm interested to learn more about the game. So those kind of experiences, whether it be someone else is bringing their fan base, someone is running into it, like, if we can capture their attention, like you said, that's how we hold on to fans and that's how we continue growing.
Yeah, I don't think there's like pride and like, we don't need help from the outside. And it's not validation. It's just like interest, right? Like, we're not gonna, like, we feel big, but like, because we care so much about it and it's a lot of our world. But like, we, you know, I've watched the PLL just, you know, continue to like explode and like get more traction and more viewership and all the things happening. And it's like, it's there's no shame in bringing in other sports or just trying to grow that audience in creative ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, something I just thought about is there's a difference in the growth outside of like, okay, we're seeing more players join, we're seeing tournaments happen, we're seeing all of this. And then there's also the growth of the television aspect of like, we're on TV more, we're having viewership. PLL, I think the game last weekend, the Redwoods game, one of them last weekend was the second most viewed professional men's lacrosse game on TV. So that is an interesting thing to look at, that it's not just, oh, lacrosse has grown 20% in the past year. It's okay, how has lacrosse grown also in terms of viewership and like what attention does that bring into the game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Albert Einstein over here. I'm a genius. Yes. Everyone, you're welcome. You can quote me on that one. But no, I'm pumped. Like I will be loud, running around, cheering, tweeting my life away at Towson. I'm ready. I need to start practicing now. I need to pick my outfits. Like that's what I need to be on. It's just be ready to continue supporting these athletes and make sure that the ladies get all the fanfare they deserve.
Absolutely. They do deserve it all.
All of it, all the above. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me. This has been amazing. I'm so pumped that we got to learn more about you, what you're doing at the PLL. And yeah, I'm all about cheering on my fellow ladies that are, leading the charge and doing amazing things in sports, and so inspired by you. And I know that everyone listening will be inspired too.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Absolutely.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.